See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us!
They're coming. Get you, Barbara.
You've got a death curse!
There's a shark.
Little pig, let me come in.
I'll go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.
Save the Scare.
Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Susan Sarandon.
And with us, as always, is the super fan, Mr. Mark Piscati.
You can call me Cher. Oh, that was God. My Cher. That was my Cher impersonation.
Catherine. And with us, as always, as well, is Catherine Horan.
Or I guess I'm Michelle Pfeiffer at this point.
There you go. And here we are at another episode. What, Mark?
No, I was just about to say, then you're Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I guess it could be. Let me.
What was your pick?
Daryl Van Horn.
I can't. It's on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of the name.
Yeah. So here we are another week. And boy, howdy, do we have a show for you today. We got some two good movies and one that was, I mean, I wouldn't say it's terrible, but it's not.
It's not terrible.
Not bad.
I would have just stopped at two good movies.
Yeah, we could have stopped at two good movies. Yeah, yeah. Joe, the people are clamoring to find out what you've watched recently.
Oh, I watched a whole bunch of stuff.
A small bucket load.
Yeah. A small pail load of stuff. Most recently, I checked out Dolly because Catherine watched it. And
Hello,
I do what Catherine says.
Dolly. That kind of Dolly?
That one, yeah. No, it's the new one on Shudder with Stifler.
Yes.
Or as other people will know him as Sean William Scott, but he will always be Stifler to me.
Yeah.
This wasn't bad. I thought it was just going to be a terrible gimmick movie, you know, guy in a doll mask. But I got to admit, it's more up my alley than I thought. There's some decent gore in it. There's a very interesting kill to the point that I had to Google to see if somebody could actually survive after having this part of his body ripped off. Turns out you can, at least for a while. It wasn't bad. It had a lot of aspects of what was the In a Violent Nature?
Oh yeah,
was that the Shudder one we liked last year?
Yeah.
It made me think of that quite a bit. But I definitely think it is worth your time and worth a watch. So you should do that. Then I made everyone else, at least I hope somebody else watched this, was Hollow Road.
Yes,
or Hollow Road. The Irish folklore.
Oh, yeah, I watched it, yeah.
The single location film with, what are their names? Matthew Rhys, who's in everything nowadays.
Yeah, he's in
like
everything.
A Samuel Jackson, you know, pretty much. And, of course, Rosamund Pike, who you guys would remember from Gone Girl. This is a single location film about a couple of parents who at 3 o'clock in the morning get a phone call from their daughter, who apparently has stolen one of their vehicles and drove off into the woods and apparently has hit somebody. And the whole movie takes place pretty much in the front seat of the parents' car, trying to figure out or trying to guide her over the phone what she should do. And it goes into a lot of exploration of just what exactly parents would do for their children. And this has a very bizarre ending that I am filled with all sorts of questions about that we unfortunately cannot talk about on the show because we'll spoil the daylights out of it. It's just too new. So later on, we'll have to off the air discuss that. I am almost caught up with Widow's Bay, which is a great show. I'm loving that one quite a bit. Actually,
tremendous.
I wrote my wife into watching that too. And again, Matthew Rhys,
Yep.
Yet another show he's in.
And another one who's in a lot of stuff is Stephen Root. He seems to be Matthew Reese and Stephen Root. Yeah. And they often are in movies or shows at this, you know, together, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stephen Root.
I know this is supposed to be a horror or film or series or something, but I find it more funny than anything else. It's the townspeople. Yeah. Every single person in that movie or that series is just a character in itself.
Yeah.
Like they could have easily taken the camera and just picked a random character and followed them for an entire episode. And I would be riveted.
Yeah. It balances comedy and horror really well. And I think it gets the horror pretty well, especially the last episode with this, it's not a hag. I can't remember the name of the creature, but that one gets really good. And
that's
pretty,
the episode I have yet to watch.
Yeah, pretty intense. But there's also a comedic side to the whole thing. And there's one part in this last episode where they're waiting for a guy who I think he's supposed to set up the sound for a big thing the mayor is going to do on the beach, and he's in the lighthouse, and they're watching this old guy the whole scene is hysterical trying to get him to come and set up the sound. But then it veers into horror, it does it really well too, and it looks great. I love the way it looks.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. So let's see. I think people should watch that too. I rewatched Promising Young Woman from 2020 because I think that's just an amazing film and it's still entertaining. Yeah. Very rewatchable.
Yeah.
Speaking of rewatchable, one night I put on Hot Fuzz because I hadn't seen it in a while and I just felt like I needed to. And as long as we're on the topic of Hot Fuzz and Edgar Wright films, I did watch The Running Man by Edgar Wright. I heard it did not do great in the theaters. I kind of liked it. I don't see any reason to not watch it. As a Edgar Wright fan, I will admit it didn't seem like an Edgar Wright film. There's a lot of little, I don't know. He's got a signature to what he does, and I didn't really see that on this film. However, that being said, as just a standalone, another Running Man story, I thought it was decent. It's a decent action film, you know. I didn't care for the ending much, but it held my interest.
Did it have like his style of music and like action with music? It didn't do that? Like Baby Driver?
That's the signature I was hoping for. I'm not necessarily just like in Baby Driver where every move is timed to the music. I wasn't expecting that, but I was expecting the soundtrack to at least be a whole nother character in the film, like Last Night in Soho and Baby Driver and everything else that he's done with a great soundtrack. This just kind of missed the marks, but it's, like I said, it's still a good film. I did watch Apex with Charlize Theron and Taron Egerton. Kind of milquetoast on that one. It all seemed very bland. I never really got into any of the characters or really cared about what they were doing. Speaking of not caring, I watched Scream 7, rented that one. Wish I had waited for that to come on, I don't know, basic cable or something. That is a movie, in my opinion, that nobody asked for that film. I found nothing interesting at all whatsoever about that. And I also watched Fight Club, and last but not least, Taxi Driver, because I hadn't seen it in ages. And that's one I'm glad I rewatched. I should rewatch that more often.
Yeah.
But that's my really long list. That's everything I watched.
Nice. Mark, what did you watch?
I didn't watch much. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that loud? I didn't watch much. I did watch.
You know, there's a level of sound that's between that first sound and what you're doing right now.
Oh, I like Mark's NPR voice.
Yeah, actually, it isn't bad. Yeah,
it's like an NPC voice.
I watched.
No, thanks.
It's finally an indoor voice.
I watched. I did watch a documentary last night. I didn't watch much horror, but I did watch a documentary of the music of John Williams. It's on Disney Plus.
I watched that too.
Just like recently, Catherine.
Mm-hmm. In the last couple of weeks. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
It's my god! I had no idea that he wrote and composed the Olympics. It just stunned me. It just blew me away. Also, let's see. I didn't get a chance to see Holcomb like a lot of other people. Joe, you saw it, right?
No.
Did Catherine?
No.
Just
I
Matt?
Meant to. I ran out of time.
Wait, something's happening here.
Is friend of the show Brian joining us?
Friend of the show Brian, he's coming in.
Can it be? Is it true? God.
Maybe.
Oh my god!
I feel like he's creeping through our window.
He's trying to come in. Come on, Brian.
Okay, come on, we all, can do it. If we
there
all clap.
Is.
Hey,
friend of the show, Brian. Brian, what are you doing here?
Oh my gosh.
He'll tell you if you can pronounce his last name. Or tell us what his birthday is.
I was just going to say, I came on to quiz you to see if you knew what my birthday was.
It's May 1st.
Oh, yeah, thanks. So, I was put to the task to watch The Greasy Strangler.
That's right.
Nice. And what are your thoughts on The Greasy Strangler?
Well, hold up. Before he gives his review of The Greasy Strangler, I just want to let the whole world know that because of Miss Wild's amazing recommendation, I have been having people watch The Greasy Strangler, friends that I think could tolerate it or maybe even understand it. And it hasn't been going well. But because of friend of the show, Brian, I asked him, I said, hey, review this film, watch the film, and then do not react to it. Don't give a hint. And I want you to surprise us on the show and give an honest review. And remember, there is no wrong answer to this, to reviewing this film.
But the right answer is that it's amazing.
So take it away, Brian.
Yeah. So I watched this movie and I got to say, I am Team Joe and Catherine on this one.
I know.
Man,
I fucking hate Brian. This is why I hate Brian.
I did not like this movie at all. I honestly think the best part that I saw that just sticks in my brain is the potato chip scene.
I thought you were going to say the ending credits.
No. Okay. I almost didn't even make it to the ending credits. So, but it was pretty bad. Porto is the best part. Other than that, I mean, it was uncomfortable. It was awkward. I don't know. Like, I usually try to watch these
movies
with my
wife. That's
what
made it so great.
Did you watch it with the whole family? The kids involved and everything?
Yeah, you should have the kids in there.
Yeah, I was like, you guys need to watch this with me. They didn't understand. No, I had to watch this one alone. And even then I was like, oh my gosh, thank God my wife wasn't around because she would have been like, what the hell are we watching? Yeah, overall, I cannot recommend it. I thought it was pretty terrible. Sorry.
Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch, Brian.
Oh, Brian.
I know, Matt. See, this is why
I knew I liked
the friend
Brian.
Of the show, Brian. Yeah. I fucking said so. Exactly. I mean, honestly, I haven't found anybody.
Up, Joe. Shut up.
Exactly. Shut up, Joe. I haven't found anybody to love this film like Matt and I have. And of course, Alone Wild and her group of friends. I haven't found someone yet, but when I do, it's going to be such a joy to just talk to and just reminisce. And but I was hoping a friend of the show, Brian, was going to love it. He went to the dark side, Matt. He went to the dark side with Catherine and Joe.
That's no good. No good, Brian.
Keep fishing, Mark.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. I can't do it.
On the other hand, I have not told anybody to go watch it. But I think Michelle and I haven't watched it together yet, so we'll do that at some point. But I have a couple friends that I will tell. We're getting together with them this weekend, and I think one of them might like it. So
you might do a Greasy Strangler or a party watch.
Well, no. we'll be having dinner and drinking and talking too much. But
are they?
But I will tell him
medicated?
To go watch it. Yeah,
are they heavily medicated? Oh man! Well, thank you, Brian. Thanks for popping on in. Definitely needed you to come in. We needed your opinion. You're like
he's a tiebreaker.
he's our fifth wheel, man. He's our fifth wheel. We need a tiebreaker.
Rising number two.
Stop it.
Perfect. It's all coming together.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get him out of here. Come on, all mute right, him.
You guys
get him out of here.
Have a good night.
Nice seeing you, Brian.
Thanks, you Brian.
Too. See ya.
Son of a bitch.
How's that master plan of yours working, Mark?
Yeah, it didn't work out at all. I was really hoping he was going to find something in it. Brian's got one of those six, you know, sense of humors that I thought it would really like connect with him, but it didn't. He went to the dark side. So, oh well.
Where were we before that bit of sunshine?
No, he is a ray of sunshine. I just loved the documentary. I went up to the cabin and didn't do much. I was doing some other things. So that's all I got for you. But I knew my little tidbit of a friend of the show, Brian, was coming in. So I didn't want to take up too much time. Matt, what'd you watch?
Doesn't Catherine go next?
Yeah, let's have Catherine.
Matt seems to be having difficulties anyway. Catherine, what did you watch? Take your time.
Like Joe, I also watched Hallow Road. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was one I had heard about and was waiting to come on streaming, and it finally came out. I really liked it. It was such an interesting idea of, you know, yeah, what would you do if you got that call? And would you help them? Would you make them go to jail, you know, whatever it might be. So posits a lot of interesting questions. Yeah, I can't wait to talk about the end of the movie and what you guys think about that. I also watched, on your all recommendation, Killing of the Sacred Deer. And I really liked that. That was great. Yeah, that was great.
Yes. Yeah, it's so good, Catherine.
We got to get Matt to watch it. Actually, we got to get Matt to participate in the podcast.
Yeah.
Technical issues.
Seems to have
but
vanished.
Yeah, that's right up my alley about, you know, again, it's kids and what do you do about these kids?
It's such a
mind twist and just such a Debbie Downer, but it's just such a lovely, lovely film. And one of us has got to like just get it in one of the topics so we get Matt to watch it. Because
watch what?
Killing of the Sacred Deer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Matt's gonna go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs with that film. He really is.
Well, I was gonna do it. I was gonna do a deer themed. We were gonna watch that and Bambi but I couldn't come up with a third.
That'd be amazing. So.
Deer horror.
Deer horror. Yeah.
Run like a deer through the forest.
Yeah.
And then the last thing
that Catherine?
I watched Lord of Illusions, which is something I'd never seen, but I'd heard of. And it was watching the In Search of Darkness from the 1995 to 1999. They profiled it there, and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And it was interesting.
Interesting.
It's got the great 90s effects that look like something you could do on your word processor at home.
Is that Clive Barker or Wes Craven?
It is. It is a Clive Barker movie.
Clive Barker's Lord of Lord.
Yeah, him. Okay. It's Scott Bakula and
love him.
Oh yeah, I don't
remember who else?
But, and a big scary baboon.
Love him. I'm a huge Scott Bakula fan.
I mean, I love Quantum Leap.
Celebrate the guy's entire catalog.
Yeah, Quantum Leap's awesome.
That's
part of the reason why we wanted to watch
that movie.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, I'm glad we watched it. Could check it off my list. And then I did see in the theaters yesterday, we saw Mortal Kombat 2. Not horror related, but that was a lot of fun. It's got some good kills. I wish it had more good kills. It was a little too much talking, not enough fighting. But overall,
too much talking before the fights, probably.
Well, just all the best stuff was in the trailer.
It's kind of what I figured.
I was wanting more.
Get over here.
But yeah, it was fun. And
did you play the game, Catherine? Mortal Kombat?
I wasn't allowed to. But I watched plenty of people play it in the arcade.
It was a controversial game at one time.
We were allowed to play Primal Rage, which was Mortal Kombat with dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm waiting for the film adaptation of that. But
what about Street Fighter? Were you allowed to play that?
No, I wasn't. Again, it was something I was aware of. I'd watched people play it in the arcade and stuff. But.
Wait, how old are you?
43.
They wouldn't let you play Mortal Kombat?
No.
It's brutal.
Well, I mean, now that she's 43, she could watch it.
I could play it now if I wanted.
But back then, when she was a kid, her parents said no.
My parents were a little overprotective about certain things.
And look what happened. Now you're on a horror podcast.
Yeah.
Drove her the opposite way.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I watched Hokum. I thought like both you and Mark, or Catherine and Mark.
I was hoping to watch it last weekend. My plans fell through.
Yeah, me too. And I went up to the cabin instead.
Mm. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's you know, I feel like this guy's movies, he of course did Caveat, which I really loved Caveat a lot. And I think I liked it more than you guys did. But I loved that one. That was in my top 10 list.
That's the one that's got the holes that Mark's afraid of.
Right. Yeah. Putting your hand through holes. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Putting your eye in the peephole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caveat.
I have a thing about holes. I think that was his line. Yeah. he's done Caveat, Hokum, Caveat, and then Oddity, and I feel like each one has just gotten a little bit better, and this one was like a full like the story just felt more, there was more going on in it, and it was a fuller story than even Oddity, and I thought it was great. And Adam Scott plays a character who's not particularly likable at the beginning, but you kind of figure out why. And he goes through a lot of growth in the film. But in the beginning, he does a couple things that are like, man, he is an asshole. Like he treats this one of the staff members at this hotel he's staying at just horribly. But it's basically, it's about a writer who goes, he's a famous writer, and he goes to Ireland to scatter the ashes of his parents near a tree where I believe is where they either met or they got engaged. And so he spreads their ashes there, and he stays in this little hotel, and he's going to be staying there, I think, for a while. He means to do some writing. And something happens one of the first nights he's there, and I don't want to go into it, but that disrupts things quite a bit, and he's gone for a while. And when he comes back to this hotel, he finds that this girl who was a bartender is missing. And so it's a bit of a mystery. And there's also, there's part of the hotel that is locked off because supposedly there's a witch, trapped there. And so it's this kind of a mystery slash supernatural slash witch horror. And it's really, really good. I think it, I like all three of his movies, and I really, really loved Oddity a lot, but I think it is the best of the three. And it is very intense. It goes there. So it's a really good movie. It's in the supernatural category, obviously. But also a bit of a mystery. So it's unsettling and there are parts of it that remind me of Oddity. And then there are parts of it especially if you remember in Caveat, there's a scene where he's like the main character is like in this kind of crawl space and there's a dead body there and he keeps looking at it and you keep expecting it to like do something, you know, that scene isn't in this movie, but there's a lot of that kind of horror where it's like, what's about to happen? What's about to happen? You know? So I highly recommend it. It is launched itself into my number one spot. So,
Number one spot.
Yeah. It replaced, I think, what was the, Undertone. I had Undertone at number one, but this has replaced that as
well. Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
And we watched Send Help.
Ah, nice.
Entertaining.
Yeah.
Not great, but it was entertaining. I liked it. What else? Oh, and of course, yes, Widow's Bay is fantastic. That one I really, really like. It's got, like I said before, it's a beautiful balance of comedy and horror. And Matthew Rhys is terrific in it. And everybody else is too. It's got a cast of characters that are very quirky, very funny. And it's that kind of small town kind of new heart. If you remember kind of characters that are just, you know, quirky characters and they add a lot to it, but there's a big mystery in this town. Apparently in this town, if you were born there, you can, that the people in this town believe that they can never leave. And if they do, they will die very quickly. Either people have a heart attack. At some point, you will die relatively quickly after leaving the island. If you weren't born there, then you're okay. You can come and go. You can live there, I guess, as long as you want. But the legend is that if you are a native of this island, you will die if you ever leave it. So I really like it. I think I highly, highly recommend that one.
The main people on the island, they're aware that if, you know, they leave the island, they'll pretty much die quickly.
Yeah, they all, I mean, as far as I know, the people that we've met there all believe that.
Is it a nice island?
It is. It's. I mean, they're trying to make it into like another of Martha's Vineyard. It's a quaint little New England island off the coast of like Maine, I think. Joe, do you remember what is it? Maine? Yeah. I think, yeah, it's Maine. And so it's a quaint little seaside island that is like a Martha's Vineyard or one of those kinds of places. Was it the Hamptons? Or, I don't know.
Why one leave? Of those,
yeah. but, you know, but the mayor, played by Matthew Rhys, he was not born there. So he can come and go, you know, if he wants. So I would think that if I knew that legend, I would maybe, and I wasn't from there, I would make sure that I had my child off the island, you know, like I'd go someplace else to have the child and then they could come back and live. But the thing is that they're really trying to boost tourism. This mayor, he really wants to boost tourism and people have people come, but it's not just that legend where you die if you were born there, if you leave it, there's other things too. There's all kinds of like
the whole ghosts. Island is haunted.
Yeah. The whole island is haunted and has curses and all kinds of stuff.
Oh,
and
so okay.
It's not just one storyline. There's a ton of different things having to do with just curses and death and ghosts and all kinds of things that come back or whatever. So I'm loving it. It looks fantastic too. It looks like, you know, it was shot in the 70s or something, but in the best possible way. So
the hotel episode was pretty funny too.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, it was. And there's
how many episodes are out right now?
There's
three
four.
So far.
Three or four. Yeah, maybe three. Yeah, three.
I think there's three, but four, they come out every Wednesday. So I think the fourth one comes out on Wednesday.
And it's on Apple TV.
Apple TV. Oh, okay.
So, highly recommended. It's one of my favorite shows. And of course, we've been keeping up on From, Not much to say about that. It's kind of the same. We're at this point just following that story through to the end, and hopefully it won't drag out too much. Hopefully they start resolving some things or actually having something happen, because it's sort of it's getting on our nerves a little bit now. But
yeah, it's basically the last on the last season, right?
I don't know, actually. I would hope so, and if it is, then they need to like step it up, because they're still kind of treading water in a lot of ways. Even though they're introducing new things, it just feels like they keep, oh, now we have to go find this thing, you know, and it's just that sort of thing over and over. And the
I gave up after the second season. I was just like, I was getting tired of it. It was
It's watchable, you know. It's not like it's not like The Walking Dead, where I was just like, I can't think I can sit through any more episodes of this. It's not like that, but it's, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
Did you watch Hollow Road too?
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, I didn't like it as much as you guys. I didn't care. I didn't like a lot of the dialogue with the woman who comes and is on the phone too. I didn't believe a lot of it. It didn't do much for me. I gave it 3 cuts. What else? I guess that's it. So let's see.
Oh, Catherine.
Ooh, that was a weird one.
Yeah.
By the way, that Catherine.
Like a high pitched one.
Gotta what was that firefighter thing that you were doing on Facebook?
Oh, it's called Fire Service Day, and they do it once a year. And they open up the firehouse you can go to, and they give you a tour of the inside, and they do different demonstrations, like they tear the cars apart with the jaws of life and stuff like that.
Oh, did they set anything on fire?
No.
Damn it. All right.
Actually, the company that I work for makes the oil that's in all of the jaws of life around the world.
Oh, that's cool.
Or the hydraulic oil, I should say.
Yeah. Interesting.
Oh. Nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It actually is.
Yeah.
Just saving lives.
Right?
There's one place that does it.
Nothing to do with it. Yeah. That's us.
Joe invented the jaws of life, actually. Yes. That's why he works there. Yeah.
They hired me because of my nipple removing capabilities from the Sears catalog.
That's right.
Yeah. Deep throwback.
He was pretty good at the nipple removal too, let me tell you. Yeah, it took him a long time to do it, though. They were like, boy, Joe, you spent a lot of time.
Matt had me convinced in Chicago. He's like,
well, I was convinced that he had done it until we started this podcast.
I was Matt. It.
Yeah.
And he's like, Joe just erases nipples from all Matt's day like, long. Yeah.
I think you'll find that my stories of Joe's life are way better than the real thing. And so I think you should just go with my stories. They're a lot better.
He was telling people I used to manually masturbate caged animals for artificial insemination.
That's right. Yeah. He was the sperm gatherer.
Yeah.
Nobody sperm rubs boy, like I think Joe. They called him.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. No, it's not. No, not really.
Well, you know, you got to make a living. So this
one. That was better.
That was way better. That's better.
Yeah. This one is terrible. Listen. That doesn't sound like anything.
That's a really bad firework.
Yeah. So this week is my pick, and my pick was Jack Nicholson movies. Jack Nicholson movies. And
clever title.
One of the
best titles, cleverest titles we've had.
I was just going to do Jack Nicholson movies. And then I was looking at Jack Nicholson horror movies, and there aren't that many that, I mean, obviously we have The Shining, but we've already done an episode on that. There's Wolf and our Wolf Man. And
nobody
I'm like,
wants to see that.
No, I don't know about that one. And then there was an old one called The Terror, but I've seen that. It's an old Roger Corman movie, and it's not great.
Lost his voice.
So, sorry.
Put it in the bumper.
Yeah.
Put it in the bumper.
What? I didn't even put your bubble voice in the bumper.
The bubble voice needs to be inserted. That
doesn't
somewhere.
Need to be. Yeah. No, yeah. His voice fact, cracked. Did you hear
I think
it?
I
was
need
like,
that.
So.
I had a little frog in my throat. I swallowed my water the song wrong way. Anyway.
You sounded like The Exorcist.
Is anybody ever going to be in the bumpers?
Mark, you saw. No, it's you are the bumper. In fact, that might be the bumper. Is anybody else going to be on the bumper? That might be it. So at any rate, there weren't many. So I thought, well, then Joe had said something about Nick Cage movies. And I was like, well, we could do a Nicolas Cage thing. And then I thought, oh, wait, Jack, Nick, is there an Olsen that did a horror movie? And I almost lost that one because there aren't a lot of Olsons in movies for whatever reason. There is a director who did one and I was iffy about it. But then I saw that Elizabeth Olsen with an E-N-S-E-N, she had done a horror movie. And so it wasn't the worst thing we've seen. Anyway, let's get things started off.
The Fat Man was the worst thing we've seen.
What?
The Fat Man was the worst thing we've seen.
Oh, that's not the worst thing that we've seen. Fat Man wasn't. It was just an embarrassment and wrong pick.
I said it's still Zombex for me. That's the worst thing ever.
P2? Maybe? I don't know. Anyway.
P2 wasn't the worst film. Thank you, Catherine.
Maybe Cube.
It's not just my films.
Oh, wait, that wasn't yours. I'm trying to think of one.
See? Anyway.
Now I can't think of Mark one. I usually try to forget them. All right. So let's just start off with Silent House. This is starring.
Get out of the way.
Might as well. Directed by two people. It took two people to get this fucking thing directed. Laura Lau. And Chris Kentis. Experience 88 minutes of real fear captured in real time. That's the tagline, Joe. Sarah returns with her father and uncle to fix up the family's longtime summer house after it was violated by squatters in the off season. As they work in the dark, Sarah begins to hear sounds from within the walls of the boarded up building. Although she barely remembers the place, Sarah senses the past may still haunt the home. So this stars Elizabeth Olsen and a couple guys I've never seen before and a girl or whatever. But, this one was, it was interesting because it was shot as though it was done in one take, and they actually marketed it when it first came out as having been done in one take, but then they had to admit that there were hidden cuts. I think they did it. I think they said in 10 minute cuts each. It was basically like 10 minute cuts. And so we really had spent a lot of time following Elizabeth Olsen around the house. And if that sounds as boring to you as it did to me, then maybe avoid this movie. I think it took a minute to get this thing moving, you know, and as a while I was like, is something going to happen? You know, cause I just felt like we were sort of treading water, in this movie for a long time. I don't normally feel this way and I've watched plenty of found footage movies. This isn't found footage, by the way, but normally found footage movies are known for making you kind of nauseous or give you vertigo. And I don't normally have that feeling, but this one, there were a few places where I was like, I'm getting a little sick, watching this, but, I do think that Elizabeth Olsen gives a fantastic performance in this. And it's really the only thing that kind of if there's any, if there's any strength to this film that keeps it watchable, it's really her performance. It's pretty strong. I feel like the big reveal was telegraphed way early in the movie. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but the big reveal of this was telegraphed very early on to me. And so it became not only a bit tedious, I kind of knew exactly what the plot was and where we were going. So, Joe, what did you think of Silent House?
You know how we've kind of determined that if movies are really, really good, you don't take a whole lot of notes.
Yeah.
Or if they're really, really, really bad, you don't take a whole lot of notes.
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot of notes.
I don't either. And the funny thing is I don't have a whole lot of notes about any of these movies for very different reasons too. I could tell you.
Yeah. I was so bored watching this. And if you had come back and said this movie was based on a survival horror video game, I would have believed you 100%.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what I felt. Like I was dumped in the middle of a storyline where there wasn't a whole lot of exposition. And, you know, it was more like I felt like I was gaming along in this movie trying to figure out what's supposed to be happening. Kind of lost. And my one big question mark after watching this whole thing is, what was with the scene with the toilet mounted on the wall that was bleeding?
Yeah.
It made no sense to me at all whatsoever.
It was trying to be super surreal or dream logic like, but nothing else had been like that the whole movie, so it really didn't make any sense.
Right. I was go ahead.
For a movie that's 88 minutes long, you know, it's almost like, I hate to say this, but this movie should have been longer and there should have been more interactions with the other characters. It seemed like it was found footage, but yet not found footage.
There wasn't enough going on. There weren't enough subplots, you know, like that girl shows up and she seemed interesting or at least mysterious. Right. But then we don't see her again until almost the end of the movie.
The end of the movie, yeah. And that's the type of stuff that I was thinking they needed to pepper in throughout the film, at least to pique my interest, wake me up from time to time. But this was a slog. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it.
I think they had the idea to do it all in one take like that and have it all be real time. But then you're kind of stuck with that format. And you can't, because the girl, when she first came at the beginning, she tells Elizabeth Olsen, well, I'll be back later tonight. Well, that means that you've got to go through the whole, if you're shooting in real time, you have to go through the whole movie before she comes back, because it doesn't make sense for her to come back 10 minutes later or 20 minutes later, you know?
It seemed like it was more important for the directors to have a single shot movie. Mm-hmm. Than it was for the storyline to be good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I agree. Yeah. Catherine, what were your thoughts on Silent House?
Yeah, very similar to you guys. I agree. Elizabeth Olsen's the best part of this. It drove me crazy for like the first 20, it felt like 20 minutes of the movie. I was trying to figure out who these people were to each other. I initially thought when Elizabeth gets to the house with the older guy, I thought maybe they were husband and wife. And then another guy shows up and I was like, oh, maybe they're all brother and sister. And it took like, it was driving me nuts. Like, who are these people to each other? And once I finally figured out who they all were, I was like, oh, okay, now I can pay attention to the movie. Mm-hmm. It just kind of goes on and on a little too much. I agree. I felt like it kind of showed its hand a little too soon. As soon as
you know what, I don't mind spoiling this one, right? Okay. Do you guys care about? Because it's not a good movie. No.
I was gonna spoil it.
Okay.
I kind of figured out when the neighbor, as soon as the neighbor girl showed up, I was like, I bet she's not real. And
yeah,
kind of was that. Yeah, all of this is basically in her mind.
Yeah.
But I mean, as it went on, I kind of, you know, I definitely liked the second half of the movie better. I thought, you know, the reason for all of this happening, because the father had molested her as a child. I was okay, bringing back the trauma and dealing with the trauma. Okay, fine.
Well, and they were taking photos of, I mean, it was both the uncle and the dad, and they were taking photos and stuff. But that was telegraphed early on, like the whole the first interaction with the dad. He acts immediately jealous about seeing a boy, this guy that she was dating, posting on her page, and it didn't. It immediately didn't strike me as just a dad being protective. It seemed there was something jealous about it, and then just a little bit later, still early in the movie, the uncle.
Yeah.
Acts really creepy with her in the basement. And I'm like,
super creepy.
Oh, well, this is going to be about, you know, the dad. This is going to be about family, you know, sexual abuse, you know. Yes. And sure enough, it was. And so there was nothing. The reveal would have been surprising if that hadn't been like that, you know.
Yeah. 100%. So, you know, it was interesting. Definitely the lesser of the three movies we watched, but you know, it wasn't awful. I thought the ending, I mean, even though you knew it was coming, kind of redeemed the beginning of the movie. And, you know, I thought it was kind of average. Gave it about 2.5, 3 cuts.
Yeah, I give it 2.5. It's there's something interesting enough about it that somebody, right. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't think anybody would like this, but who knows? Mark, what are your thoughts on Silent House?
Yeah, what? No, it's a fun movie. let's have a real-time horror film in a dark house for an hour and 26 minutes only to end with one of the most sickest, disgusting thing, you know, with, it has to deal with child molestation from a father and uncle. What a topic. Yeah, not a fan. I mean, it does happen, and I guess, you know, it. Sometimes you got to watch that kind of stuff, but that's not really my cup of tea to watch.
It felt trite because it's such a serious topic, and this didn't feel like a very serious movie, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I figured, Matt, when you watched the trailer and thought, you know, this was going to be maybe an interesting choice because the trailer, you know, looked interesting. Did you see the trailer?
You lost me at watch the trailer. I totally picked this just because it fit the theme with Olsen.
You know? Oh, my God. So you didn't even watch the trailer?
No.
Yeah, you pulled a Mark.
I found a horror movie that had Olsen in it.
You pulled me. That's what I do sometimes. Just, hey, I'm going to pick this one.
Well, this would be one of your better picks, probably, but...
Yeah, true. See, my problem is that, you know, the problem is real-time movies. You know, it's an interesting choice, and it's a bold choice, but if you're going to do a real-time film, you have to make it constantly interesting, and going to a room-to-room with a lantern or a flashlight gets really old really, really fast. And I love continuous shots on film. For example, the beginning of the shot of Boogie Nights, that's interesting. Lots of things going on. Also, like Kill Bill Volume 1, when Uma Thurman walks into the club, and that's a continuous, like, I think it's like an 8-minute shot. That's awesome. Also, Children of Men, remember that continuous shot? It's brilliant. Or even the film, the Hong Kong film, Breaking News opening scene, if you guys ever seen that. That is a awesome continuous opening
or
scene.
Mads.
Yeah, Mads. Yeah.
That was the whole thing and that movie was all one shot. Like there were no hidden cuts. It was all one shot.
Or there's the fight scene in The Raid. There's also the fight scene in Old Boy, Daredevil. Yeah.
Daredevil, yeah. Oh, Daredevil's got some great continuous scenes, shots. But, you know, continuous shots are hard to do, and it takes a lot of time and planning and rehearsing. So Silent House takes a big swing at this, but when it's just dark and it's just hiding and it's just a drag and boring. And I agree with Catherine and everybody else. Like, I think Olsen does, I mean, she's carrying the film, and she is fun to watch. And, you know, I think Matt said last episode that this was one of her favorite or one of her first feature films.
Yeah.
Impressive. Those kudos to her. I'm only going to give it 1.5 cuts, so it's just wasn't my cup of tea. It really wasn't. I just wish it was more interesting, you know, just make it. It was a gimmick, and the gimmick, they used it as a gimmick again, and it looked like a gimmick.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's all there I got needed
to
that.
Be. There needed to be more things going on, you know.
For sure.
All right. More characters. Well, next up, we have the 1987 film, "The Witches of Eastwick," directed by George Miller, who directed Mad Max Fury, all the Mad Max movies. Basically, he's directed. He created Mad Max, and Happy Feet, and. You know, whatever, Furiosa, Pig in the City, Babe, and Babe, Pig in the City.
There it is.
No, he didn't do Babe. He did Babe, Pig in the City.
The City. You guys love that film. I still haven't seen it.
It's not as good as the first one.
Yeah. let's see.
George Miller, man. Holy shit.
Yeah, like, George Miller.
What a contrast. He went from Happy Feet 2 to Mad Max Fury Road. I mean, what a fucking changeup.
Yeah.
God, talented.
So if I could finish introducing the movie.
Sorry, Matt.
The Witches of Eastwick, three beautiful women, one lucky devil. Three single women in picturesque village have their wishes granted at a cost when a mysterious and flamboyant man arrives in their lives. This stars Jack Nicholson, Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer. And all of these three are at the height of their game as actors. And Jack is in, you know, he's in full Jack Nicholson mode for this thing. It also has Richard Jenkins, and who I think is terrific. So I think there's some sound coming out of your background, Catherine. Sounds like somebody going. Anyway, let's see. But yeah, this came out in 1987. I loved this movie when it came out. I saw it in the theater a couple times. And this time, I had not seen it in quite some time. I don't remember the last time I watched it. Probably in the 2000s at some point, maybe I watched it. So it's been probably 20 years since I've seen this. And I think it holds up. I do think the beginning is... It takes a little while to get this thing moving, but once Jack arrives and it starts moving, I really like it. And I love the last act of the movie. I think it really, it goes to a great place. And Jack is that scene in the church is, he's just completely unhinged. And it's one of the great like monologues of movies. So anyway, let's see, I guess, Mark, what are your thoughts on The Witches of Eastwick?
Like everybody, you know, says when you watch a really good movie, you don't have a lot of notes. But, you know, Witches of Eastwick, what not to love. It's one of my favorite movies back in the 1980s that I rewatched over and over again. This was when I was going. It's just what I went, you know, gaga over, you know, it's Jack Nicholson and you know, he's just amazing. And I mean, this was when he was in his prime. He was doing Prince's Honor and Terms of Endearment. He did The Shining the year after, or a couple of years after, he did Batman. I was absolutely Ironweed. My God. So yeah, like,
he was in a run of movies during that time.
Yeah, yeah. And it, the fact that what he had done, like especially like in the '80s, and it's like Jack is like Nicholson. It's the reason why I really got into film at such a, I mean, pretty much early age. I mean, I was like I was like a sophomore in high school, and I was in theater class, and we had to do a monologue. And little did I know that I had, you know, I was supposed to take a monologue from a play. I did the monologue from Witches of Eastwick, and I did the church monologue scene. And I started on stage when he's in the ice cream and he's talking about, you know, pistachio and then the double chocolate chip. And I started the scene from there. I had a fellow student up there as the ice cream guy. And then I started the scene from there asking for a double chocolate chip. And then I start screaming, and then I run off stage, and I run all the way around the theater to the back of the house, and I burst through the doors, and I did the church monologue, and I did the throwing up of the cherries like in the aisles and whatnot. It was insane, and it was all for Jack. It was all for Jack, and of course, you know, I got a D-. It's because it was supposed to be from a play, not a movie. But I didn't care. I love Jack Nicholson. So, I mean, just Jack taking this role is like, how perfect is it that he took this role and he gets to make out with Michelle Pfeiffer, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer? I mean, or Cher. It's crazy. I just love it. So what are you guys laughing about?
He made out with Michelle Pfeiffer twice.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah, well, he did in the movie. Yeah, he did. I always thought it was kind of weird how Michelle Pfeiffer just gave up so easily. Like, I mean, there wasn't much fight, you know. Like, she knew exactly what was going to happen. I guess, you know, that's kind of like how she got so seduced. She's going, he's going for me now. And, you know, he just did the great line of, you know, women are great and how amazing and special they are. And, you know, make babies, make milk. I don't know. It's just a great, the tennis scenes, it's such a joy to watch. And, well, I have like one note here. I said, how does Cher make a living only selling those clay Buddha dolls? Like, that's all she did. There was nothing else but those clay Buddha dolls. I said, how is she making a living? I love, what's the actress's name, who was in, she was Lambert in, Alien.
Veronica Cartwright.
Yes. Veronica Cartwright. She's wonderful in that. The oatmeal scene when she's just spewing off and the husband's just trying to shut her up, you know, shoving the spoon in her mouth. That's just a wonderful scene. And especially when she falls down the stairs and she breaks her leg. She was also
in The Birds. Hitchcock's
The
Birds.
Yeah, she was the daughter.
Yeah.
She was the little girl. No, it's just a great film. Shannon watched it for the first time and she absolutely adored it. She loved it. She thought it was wonderful. So I just loved seeing that movie and watching someone watch it for the first time. It's always a treasure. So that's what I got. I love it.
All right. Joe, what did you think of Witches of Eastwick?
I'd like to start off by saying I can't stand it when we do rentals because I'm such a sucker. This was like $6.99 to rent or $12.99 to buy on Apple, and damn them, they saw me coming a mile away, so I bought it. I'm glad I did because I do really like it. I'm like Matt, I'm like you. I saw it like 20 years ago. Yeah. I haven't watched it since, but after the movie was done, I'm very glad. I know I'm going to watch this again. Of course I will, because it got a John Williams score, and it was tremendous.
Yeah.
And I also learned with some research that one of the producers, John Peters, kind of a dick. He switched the roles of Susan Sarandon and Cher without telling them until their first day of shooting, which caused a huge rift between them.
Oh, my God.
Which they worked out, like, within a couple of days.
What?
Yeah. It was all in the required reading. I love the fact that they wrote in there that when he comes into town that nobody can remember his name. I just thought that was kind of neat. This is such a whitewashed film. If you watch the scene where they're at the classical concert that Susan Sarandon is playing in, they pan through the crowd. Every single person in that entire scene is white.
Yeah.
100% pure stark white. Yeah. It's funny. They've got Pavarotti singing Nessun Dorma in there, which was great. Speaking of musicians, it kind of bothers me in movies when they hire actors to play musical instruments that aren't musicians. Like all the kids, like, Susan Sarandon, I know when she was playing her cello, she had gone through weeks of training. Of course, when she found out that was the role that she was in, she like did a speed learning on just to get the fingering right and the bow work done. And she did a tremendous job. But the kids in her band, there's so many kids that know how to play instruments that could have easily been put in that part. I don't know. The only thing I'm not a huge fan of is the Jack Nicholson monster at the end. It's kind of cartoony, but that's just, you know, that's the sign of that's 1987 for you.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of Veronica Cartwright, I had to look this up while I was watching the film because she looks so much like Amanda Seyfried. I had to make sure that she wasn't like Amanda Seyfried's mother.
Mm.
And turns out she's not. But that got me thinking, all right, well, if we were going to recast this film today, who would you put in all the roles? Obviously, Amanda Seyfried would play Veronica Cartwright's spot. But my thought is, why not give Yorgos Lanthimos a shot at this? And we'll have Jesse Plemons play Jack Nicholson's part. And then Emma Stone, Rachel McAdams, and Anna Kendrick would be the witches.
Ooh.
That's my vote.
That's good.
And then I also was thinking, because at the end, hope I'm not spoiling anything, but there's some offspring who are males.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking, well, when are they going to do the Warlocks of Eastwick? And who would be the roles for that? So I thought, because you got to reverse all the roles. So Jack Nicholson's character would be a woman. I say Anne Hathaway. And the three guys, because you got to have a redhead, a blonde, and a brunette. Simon Pegg, Mark Ruffalo, and Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
I would watch that movie.
No argument for me.
Yeah.
See? There you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, they could always redo this, because from what I understand, there was a bit of a backlash because the people who read the book, you know, the movie, they did not like the movie at all. It kind of bastardized the book quite a bit. But I haven't read the book, so I have no idea. But it, you know, you certainly could do a more faithful rendition of the book if it really was that different.
They tried making TV shows twice. Well, I think they did a movie and they did a TV show. It's just called Eastwick. John Berthenol's in it, and it only lasted like one season.
Did he play the devil?
No. He played Ray Gardner.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for the Witches of Eastwick.
What about Catherine?
Oh, sorry, Catherine. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's part of the show.
Yeah.
No, this was a fun one. I'm glad you picked this one, Matt. I don't have many notes on this because I was just engrossed in watching the movie. But I thought Jack Nicholson's hair, he's got it in this little ponytail in the back.
And his wardrobe is tremendous.
I was like, is that the precursor to the man bun? I did like that the ladies in this movie are friends and they're really not rivals. I could really see this turning into them kind of bickering and fighting over who gets to be with Daryl. But the fact that they did for a minute, overall they get along. It's like one big happy family, and they keep referring to each other as family. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then it just turned into practical magic.
Exactly. That's true. I had that thought many times. I want to live in this town. I know it's whitewashed, but aside from that, this is like the perfect picturesque little town. I was like, that's where I want to move to. And then my only little nitpicky thing, I had a thought at one point when all the ladies are living with Daryl. I was like, doesn't Michelle Pfeiffer, doesn't she have like six kids in her, she doesn't have a husband. Who's watching her children?
Right. Yeah. Where are those kids?
But other than that.
The 8-foot tall guy.
The 8-foot tall
guy. Butler was.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. No problem there. But yeah, this is a fun one. It's just, you know, it's delightful. I love seeing these actors all together. They're such a great cast. And I think they're all perfectly cast, too. Like and you mentioned, Joe, about the swapping of the parts. Like, it was really hard for me to imagine Cher in the Susan Sarandon role and vice versa. So
yeah,
I'm kind of glad they made that switch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Question for first Matt and Joe: out of the three witches, which witch would you prefer? Matt,
what
for?
If you had to pick one of the witches, the three witches to be with, who would you pick?
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Joe?
Yeah, probably Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, I go for Cher. I go definitely Cher. And Catherine, do you find Jack Nicholson like attractive? And would he be able to seduce you, Mr. Daryl Van?
No.
No, you don't think
not
so?
Not in this. I mean, I found Jack Nicholson to be good looking in other things. I don't know. In this, he's just kind of smarmy. But that's also the point of it. No, it doesn't do much for me in this one.
All right.
All right. Well, our last movie is a fun one I had not seen before. Mm-hmm. And this one is, what year did this come out?
2017,
directed by Brian Taylor, who he directed Ghost Rider, which I think that wasn't that Spirit of Vengeance? Was that Nick Cage as well?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. One of his finest works.
Yeah. And Crank, which I don't know that one. I think
that's a fun film.
Oh, it's a Jason Statham. I don't like Jason Statham. I hate that guy.
Corey Haim's in Crank 2. Corey Haim's in Crank 2.
Hellboy the Crooked Man. He also directed. This is starring Nicolas Cage, Selma Blair, and a cast of youngsters mostly. So in a suburban community, moms and dads, one after the other, mysteriously feel the irresistible impulse to attack and kill their own offspring. I don't remember now. Did we ever find out why?
No.
I don't think so. No.
We never.
It's the key to a good zombie film. Yeah.
Yeah.
The TV. I don't know why.
It was the TV static that was doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it definitely seems it functions like a zombie movie, even though the people are not, zombies. They are they're able to function and they're thinking people, but they have become consumed with this desire to kill their children, only their own children, by the way, and only when they get close enough. Now the rules of this, I think, get a little, if you want to really zoom in on this, the rules of this get a little confusing, because the mom, Selma Blair, didn't feel the urge to kill her kids until she got within sight of their house, and but it seemed like the parents of kids at school were arriving at school ready to kill their kids, and I can't imagine that all those people were just hanging out in the parking lot. So I'm not exactly sure all the rules, and they may not have cared. They might have been like, ah, screw it. But it also kept Selma Blair from becoming evil too quickly, I guess. But anyway, again, Nicolas Cage has a couple pretty unhinged moments, and it's a little rage cage going on for sure. So, Catherine, what did you think of Mom and Dad?
I love this. This was just a lot of fun.
It was fun.
It was just, I didn't know anything about this. I'd never heard of it before. And so I was very curious to see what this one was about. And I just went in, had a good time. I love the opening credits. It looked like a TV show as they were introducing the cast. I love all the rage cage moments in with the pool table. I thought was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I loved us.
Motherfucker!
Right?
It felt a little, that one moment where he's pounding on the door and he says that. It reminded me. Yeah, it reminded me of his voice in Long Legs, that mm-hmm, little moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you put your left foot in, you put your right foot. I mean, that's improv right there. That's Rage Cage going
so
in.
Great. It's yeah, so
made no sense.
It did make me wonder, what is Nicolas Cage like in real life as a parent? Is he?
Oh.
Is Jesus, he unhinged at home?
I'd love to be a fly on the wall.
Right?
Does he want to have kids? Home.
Is he semi-normal in real life? I can't imagine.
I think he tried to, really, really tried hard to make an Elvis baby with
Lisa Marie.
Yeah, Lisa Marie.
I'm not surprised.
He married her and really tried to make a baby just to get some Elvis blood in his family. Golly, what a weirdo.
I love the line about saws all means it saws all. I thought they could bring in that back. Durr. That was funny. When they were attacking the wire hangers, they were, that was a cool scene when Selma Blair's in the closet and she's got the daughter and her boyfriend of her locked in, and she gets the hanger and is whacking at them through there. And it's like, no more wire hangers.
Yeah.
And then I loved when they brought in the grandparents. And you're right. thinking, oh, yes. And it's that moment of, oh, crap. Because they mention it early at the beginning of the movie that Nick Cage's parents are coming over. Mm-hmm. And you kind of forget about that. And then the doorbell rings and they're like, oh, no, it's the in-laws. And then, of course, when they show up, they try to kill their kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought that was just a fun touch because you don't know up until that point. Is it just, you know, parents trying to kill like actual children, but it is literal parents trying to kill their kids. And you get a great kind of cameo there from Lance Hendrickson. You see him for all about 5 minutes, but he was a lot of fun to watch. And mm-hmm. yeah, this was great. I had a lot of fun with this one. Nice kind of turn your brain off and enjoy movie.
I love the ending too. I don't want to give it away, but the last line is so great. I love that. Mark, what did you think of Mom and Dad?
Well, you know how I love when children die. I really enjoyed this film. We get an infant left in a car getting hit by a train, and it goes straight to this great 60s credit sequence, which absolutely made me giddy. Love the music choices for this film. I had questions though, just like Matt and Catherine's, like, why was this happening? And was it ever really explained besides Dr. Oz talking about mother pigs stomping on piglets? Is it the TVs doing it? It seems like, you know, once, you know, there was static on a screen or something, that's what, you know, like made the parents go off. The song choice of Must Have Been Love, But It's Over Now, when the baby was just born in the hospital scene, was absolutely pure joy. I loved it. It's like, here, you want to hold the baby? And I'm like, don't get the baby away. And it was really tense. It was really like this.
Yeah.
She starts squeezing it. And I was just like, oh my God. It's like, are they actually going to kill this infant? And I'm
and all
glad.
all the dads hanging out at the nursery. They're all like,
just stare at the kids like, oh my God, it's great. My favorite line in the film was Nicolas Cage during his rage cage. He says blue bonnet butter tummy line was absolutely hysterical. And I really enjoyed that heartwarming scene at in line afterwards, the Nick Cage rage. And I wrote it down. It says, I know what we're doing. I know we're doing it right. It's just hard to get in my head, you know, get my head around it. I used to be Brent and used to be Kendall. And now we're just mom and dad. And being a parent, it's a just hard being a parent with responsibilities, but it's also a jarring experience of losing your identity so quickly. And like when before I was a parent, I was a nutcase. And when my daughter was born, it's like I had to switch personalities, switch, you know, who I was as a person so I could be like a nurturing parent. And I mean, that's really jarring. And it's for being a parent, you know, it's, I really, you know, related to that line and just them sitting down in the basement after the rage cage and the pool incident. And they're just like, it's like I used to be somebody and I'm, you know, a completely different person as a parent. And it's a jarring experience. And I really related to that. So I thought this was a great film. I hated the ending, though. I hated the ending. It just didn't explain anything. And what was the line at the end, Matt, that you loved so much?
Something that you could tell he's about, it cuts him off actually, which was, I thought was, I loved it. He says, we love you, but sometimes we just really want to, and then it cuts him off, you know, and kill you basically, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the duality of parenting, you know, you love them, but sometimes you just want to kill them, you know? I loved that ending.
Did they ever say like when the virus ended or something?
It didn't end. They were chained up.
They're just chained up.
Yeah.
I just wanted a little bit more out of it, I think. But I did enjoy the movie through and through. It was a lot of fun.
Joe, what did you think of Mom and Dad?
Well, first to answer my question, which was, does Nicolas Cage have children? The answer is yes. He has a daughter named August Francesca Coppola Cage. And then he has two sons. One's name is Weston, and the other one's name is Kal-El.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Oh, fuck. Cage.
What? Funny.
Oh, man. Named his son after Superman.
Anyway, I liked this film, believe it or not. I know the movie was made in 2017, but it opens up with this really weird 70s ballad that made me think I was watching the wrong film. So, like, I had to stop it, pause it to make sure the name popped up, and it was weird.
But they question returned about, to, I mean, who that was.
Yeah. My question about the family dynamic, they have a younger brother. Why was he not in school? He's certainly old enough that he should have been in at least first grade. It's not like he was a preschooler or a kindergartner.
Robert asked that question too. I said it must have been a parent service day or a teacher service day or something.
Yeah, I didn't get it. The daughter went to school and the parents went off to, you know, it's just, why is he lounging around at home all day in his PJs? So
maybe they were doing finals. The high school kids, so maybe school was already done.
Very well could be. I agreed that the killing of the newborn scene was very intense. I like that quite a bit. His pool table down in the basement, when they show the flashbacks of him like trying to build it, he's building it in a basement with no lights on. The only lights that are coming in are from the very small daylight windows that the... Like, wouldn't you just got to be like a pull chain light bulb in that room or something? Turn it on. Mm-hmm. Let's see this pool table that he's putting together. And then, of course, we are introduced to the man, the legend, Rage Cage, which I'm going to give him a pass only because he was wearing a Misfits t-shirt through that entire scene. Matt, are you ready with the rim shot?
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure?
No. Okay. Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I think they should do a sequel to this movie, but they should reverse the roles so that the kids are trying to kill the parents, and the name of it would be Eat the Parents. Thank you.
No.
I thought that was great. I did think that the battle with Nick Cage's parents, that was a softball lobbed in the first scene. Like the minute, I mean, I knew what this movie was about. And then they say, oh, your parents are coming to this. I'm like, oh, it's an intergenerational thing.
I had forgotten about that whole thing. And so when they came, I was like, oh shit. It like ramped it up one.
And I rarely say this, although I guess I've said it twice so far in this episode. This is a movie that I thought should have been longer because it was an interesting, interesting concept that I just wish they could have gotten into a little bit more. And then the reason I'm sort of altering my statement is the concept is weird because you're only killing your own kids. And so your bloodlust gets done like with, you know, a kid or two, if you even have kids. Some people don't have kids, so I guess they're not affected.
Right.
But, you know, like what other bloodlust in any movie is satisfied simply by a number, a limit, you know, like if you've got 12 kids, well, that's one thing, but they're not everyone's Irish Catholic. So if you've only got one or two kids, like you could kill your only child and then you're like, all right, well, I'm satisfied. You know, I'm done. It's end the movie.
Yeah. That's kind of what happened with when the boyfriend was just walking into the house and he's going, hey, you know, like, where's your daughter? And she's just sitting on like that rocking chair and she's going, she's inside. And she was just so content. She was just at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would like to take this a step further. And I was thinking it would be great if it was just all adults versus all kids, whether you're your kids or not. Which would make an interesting spin on this film because, of course, all the kids are going to have to try to team up together and defeat all the adults. But then I was wondering, like, well, where's the age limit? You know, there's no biological stopping point that says, oh, once you turn 18, you know, it's the government that you can vote. But it doesn't mean now all of a sudden you're going to kill every child you see. So yeah. I don't know. I think there's some merit behind that concept of this film. I think it just needs to be worked a little bit. But that being said, I did like it. It was a fun little ride. Wasn't too long. Could have been longer. But
yeah.
Anyway, that was it.
Definitely all right. Could have been longer.
Well, that's it for my pick. So the next episode is Joe's episode, and he's got some humdingers for us, from what I understand.
Give it to me, Joe.
Okay, so I'm going off of what Matt did. So Matt did almost Jack Nicholson films.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing films with almost Jack Nicholson, or as I like to call them, Christian Slater films. So we're watching Christian Slater horror, which I like to call this episode the Clean Slater. So we're going to watch Mindhunters from 2004, which is on Paramount Plus. We're going to watch Alone in the Dark from 2005, which is on Tubi. We're going to watch Rites of Passage, which is on from 2012, which is on Tubi.
I've seen every single one.
Alone in the Dark.
Oh, God.
From 1982?
No, Alone in the Dark's from 2005. The 1982 one's the good one.
There is one with Jack Palance, Donald Pleasance, Martin Landau, and you're not having us watch that one.
We're not watching
God
that one.
God damn it.
We're watching the 2005 one with Christian Slater.
Oh, fuck. Oh, God. I know exactly what where we're going. It's a truck heading towards a big log.
Greetings and salutations.
No Interview with a Vampire?
No, that's the obvious choice. No,
yeah.
We're not doing that. And Heather's technically isn't a horror film, so we can't do that either.
This was these films are like at Christian Slater's like low point in his career. It's just, oh, Joe, you are
2004, 2005, and 2012. It's not, you know. Everything went downhill after Gleam in the Cube and Pump Up the Volume. So,
Pump Up the Volume. I love Christian Slater. I love him. Yay!
So there, love it or hate it. That's our next episode.
Joe's the pinhead of our show. It's like he just likes causing pain.
I get giddy with Joe's picks. I do. I get excited.
You never know what they're going to be.
If we just watch bangers all the time, this is boring.
Yeah.
All right. Well, those are three movies we will be watching in the next.
I think Alone in the Dark has Tara Reid in it. I think Tara Reid's in one of them. Maybe Mindhunter. Right.
Oh.
I think Joe just likes it.
The Academy Award watcher Tara Reid.
Oh. Joe just likes it when I text him. God damn it, Joe.
Yep.
It like brings him joy.
I frame all of them. I print them off the frame.
There's
going to
be some
wall.
God damn it, Joes in this. I'm going to go, thank you, Joe.
I haven't looked forward to the next 2 weeks in quite some time, but I am.
That's funny.
What a pick.
All right. Well,
Clean Slater.
There we go. Clean Slater.
great title.
So here we go. That's what we're going to be watching the next couple weeks.
Here we go. We're
actually, this one, wait a minute. We're not that close to our summer thing, right? No, because we still have this one. So the one after that will be when we record a few
in
a row.
We're getting close to episode 150, too.
Mm-hmm.
What's significant about 152?
No, 150.
Two?
Oh.
Two isn't also.
Yeah, two is an also, Joe.
Yeah, we're getting close to 153 as well.
That's
Joe.
Right.
Just so you know.
All right.
All right. Well,
Clean Slater.
Go to CinescareHorror.com and buy our merchandise. Promote us and help us get through the next couple of weeks. Anything else? Any other misery you want to shed upon us all?
Hardcore horror.
Nope. Shut up, Joe. Shut up. I fucking love this film. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
That's going to be on a loop for next episode.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we will see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Mark can't even talk.
See anything you like?
Have you all got amnesia? They just cheated us.
It was a shark. Little pig, let's come in.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
What was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I'm just gonna bash your brains.